Welcome everyone to another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. It is Wednesday, July 21st. Fresh off the Milwaukee Bucks winning the NBA championship last night. Tonight, we've got the NHL expansion draft. We've got a special guest coming on today with Bobby Thompson, who's an NFL journalist. He covers the New England Patriots extensively, but his work has also appeared in places such as Full Press Coverage, FanSided, Pewter Plank, and more. So we're going to deep dive some of the latest and greatest NFL rumors that are out there, as well as what's going on up in New England with the QB situation, Bill Belichick's revenge tour after Tom Brady won the Super Bowl in his first kick of the can with Tampa Bay, and more. So we'll get to him in a little bit, but right off the hop, and this is a little bit of a spoiler alert there for you. So if you want the NHL draft to be a complete surprise to you there, plug your ears, hum a little tune for the next couple seconds. But breaking news just coming out right now. Elliot Friedman reporting that Seattle will not select Carey Price in the expansion draft tonight. Not sure why that's the case. I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, kid who's from Pacific Northwest. Franchise goaltender. I think a lot of those quote-unquote rumors of his injuries are far overblown and a little bit of gamesmanship on the part of the Canadians and whatnot there. So I think today is going to be, unfortunately, a little bit anticlimactic because that Carey Price news is not the only thing that's already leaked out. An 8 p.m. show tonight, but could be 1 p.m. and we already know who Seattle's taken on all of their picks. So NHL not doing a great job of keeping their cards close to the vest. Unfortunate, because it's going to take a lot of the fun out of tonight, but still worth tuning in. We'll see who the Seattle Kraken have coming out. They've got all sorts of special guests lined up. Some of them announced, some of them not announced, and who knows? We'll see how much mystery there still is come NHL expansion announcement time tonight. But also wanted to touch on, obviously, last night, NBA championship was handed out. The Larry O'Brien Trophy is going to Milwaukee for the first time in 50 years. 1971 was the last time the Bucks won the NBA championship, back with a little-known player named Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or Lou Alcindor, if you really want to go back in time there. But reminiscent of how dominant he was back in the day, Giannis putting on a performance for the ages. 50 points, 14 rebounds, 5 blocks, ended up getting named NBA Finals MVP. No shocker there to anyone. Ended up ticking off both of Kobe Bryant's little challenges that he gave to him. If you guys remember a few years ago, all the NBA players were tweeting at Kobe for their Mamba challenges. And the two things that Kobe sent to Giannis was win an MVP. And then once he did that, he went back to him and said, what now? He said, win an NBA championship. So he's checked off both those boxes now in his career already. And keep in mind, the kid's only 26 years old, and you could realistically make an argument that he's already a fringe Hall of Famer if he retired today. With that championship, he's got back-to-back MVPs, Defensive Player of the Year Award, a Finals MVP. Only Michael Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon have done that. So in the history of the NBA, there's only been three players now. So MJ, Olajuwon, and now Giannis to have gotten those three things on their resume. And Giannis is just getting started. It's really looking like he's coming into his own there. First player in finals history as well, too, to eclipse the 40-point, 10-rebound, 5-block line. And he did it by getting all the way up to 50 points there. So tied for most points in a title-clinching game in NBA history. You got to go all the way back to the legendary Bob Pettit to get someone who had a equal amount of points to what Giannis did last night in a clinching game. And you got to remember, too, that it's only 3 weeks ago that Giannis hyperextended his left knee. Bucks fans are in a panic. Some people are saying he's done for the season. Could be even, you know, major reconstructive surgery, might be over portions of next year, all of that. So Bucks fans are in a tizzy. What does he do? Comes back a week later and runs off one of the greatest finals performances in NBA history. Like, if you look at his body of work, that what he did over the course of that entire series against Phoenix, it's pretty impressive. And if we look at it in the grand scheme of things here too, and obviously LeBron won in Cleveland, he won in LA as well too. But if you look at just what he did in Miami and what KD did in Golden State, yeah, they both went out there and won two titles, but they joined essentially super teams. They stacked the deck a little bit. What Giannis has done is homegrown talent. You look at any attempt to say that there's a big three in Milwaukee is essentially laughable because they've got some nice pieces and serviceable players, but to say that Holiday and Middleton are on the same level as, you know, Wade and Bosch or Curry and Thompson or whatever you want to stack up big threes, it's just not the same. So some people have already started the debate, and I mean, NBA Twitter is rife for greatest of all times and this, that, and LeBron slander and KD slander here, there, and everywhere in between. But it's already been thrown out there of, is Giannis's one title in Milwaukee more impressive than KD's two titles in Golden State or LeBron's two titles down in Miami? And I think it's worth exploring. It's, in my mind, I genuinely think it is, based on that supporting cast and the obstacles they had to overcome and just the grind that they went through and the fact that he could have very easily just said, I'm done in Milwaukee. I'm done with the small market. I'm going to take my talents to whatever, New York or LA or South Beach. Or he would have had no shortage of suitors in the NBA looking for his services there. But just seeing a team not need to go out there and make a big three or a super team or bring that AAU mentality of I've got to get all my buddies on this team and I'm going to hold out or try and force my way out of town or demand a trade or whatever it is to get my way. It's number one, refreshing. It's number two, probably a good sign for some of those other small market teams, you know, like a Denver or a Phoenix who seem to be on the cusp of competing and going head to head with some of these superpowers that are out there, whether it's on the West Coast or the East Coast. So if you look at what he did and the manner in which he did it, I personally am more impressed with Giannis's one title than KD's two on the West Coast or LeBron's two down in Miami. So I don't think I'm alone in thinking that. I think that the KD truthers and the LeBron stands out there will probably vehemently disagree, but hey, to each of their own. I really was impressed with everything he did, just even the way that he's composed himself and spoken to reporters and the media and his answers he's giving and how insightful he is and just such a down to earth. He's team first. He's not a me. He's not trying to build some giant Giannis brand or launch a multimedia company or anything like that. Everything he says comes across as genuine. And that's really refreshing these days in the NBA. If you look at what the rest of the Bucks did last night, Holiday was one rebound shy of a triple-double. He had a 12-9-11 line. Not the greatest performance offensively for him. Had a pretty solid, serviceable defensive presence last night and locked up some of the Suns players, at least gave them pause and made contested shots and made them work for the buckets they got. So he was certainly serviceable, but nothing jumping off the page. Middleton with a 17-5-5 line, hitting clutch shots down the stretch, though. He, for all the accolades and the praise that Giannis was getting, and he was certainly well-deserved, possibly a little bit overlooked, were some of the baskets that Middleton made down the stretch to make sure that the Suns didn't chip away at that lead. And he certainly was a huge part of that victory, not only last night, but especially after those first two games where they went down 2-0 and did so in kind of embarrassing fashion and didn't look like the Milwaukee Bucks that we saw the last four games, that's for sure. He was really someone who took his game to the next level in those last four games and was a huge factor of why the Bucks were able to get it done in six as opposed to the Suns getting it done in four. Phoenix, I mean, you got to feel a little bit for Chris Paul. How many more chances he's even going to get at a ring? Who knows at this point? He's probably got another year or two left in the tank, I would assume, but history is not kind to undersized point guards as far as that longevity once they do get into those upper 30s years of their lives there. And I mean, he certainly gave it his all last night, 26 points, 5 assists, but a lot of Phoenix Suns players, and I'm sure Chris Paul is probably front and center on his mind, is he's now 0-13 in playoff games reffed by Scott Foster. So I'm sure that as soon as he saw who was reffing that game last night, a lot of the sharps in Vegas picked up on that right away, and they were hammering that Bucks money line. So he's got to be a little bit, let's say, disappointed in the NBA's selection committee for who gets to go out there and actually officiate these games. And I'm sure he's going to have a lot to say in the offseason, especially given the fact that with the Players Association, it's essentially him and LeBron are the voices of the players right now. So we might see some larger scale ripple effects coming from this. I don't think we've heard the last of the Chris Paul, Scott Foster saga there, but I mean, unintentional comedy moment last night there. You've got Chris Paul trying to get at Scott Foster because of a blown call, and there's Bobby Portis coming in and blocking him from getting to him to complain about that call, and then essentially laughing in his face there. So Bobby Portis having his NBA Finals moment. He was a bit of a microwave coming off the bench, 16 points, 3 rebounds, a little bit of a spark plug there. But Bobby Portis playing a bigger role in that series than I think anyone could have predicted, because he was essentially an afterthought in some of the Bucks series leading up to the finals, but certainly came into his own as the playoffs progressed and started to carve out a little bit of a role. And, you know, good for him. But I mean, Chris Paul, you got to feel for him, because you look at the rest of the Phoenix Suns roster and didn't get a ton of help. Once again, if you're relying on Chris Paul to be your leading scorer, you're probably setting yourself up for a recipe for disaster. It's essentially what happened last night. Devin Booker, 19 points, 5 rebounds, looked lost. Some will say he choked on the big stage. I mean, I just think it's more of a matter of this is a young kid who I think people probably were a little bit premature in anointing him the next Kobe Bryant and all of those headlines that were flying earlier in these playoffs there. And yeah, he had some certainly memorable moments, these NBA playoffs, but to put him on that level when essentially he's accomplished nothing. This is his first trip to the playoffs. He doesn't have any major awards to his name there. Definitely a little bit premature. I think this will probably serve him well over the course of his career. Probably not going to be the last time he's in an NBA Finals. I think he's an exceptionally talented player, but I think we saw that lack of experience and uncertainty of what to do in those big moments, and was probably a little bit more deferential than he should have been. Didn't have that killer instinct down the stretch, didn't want the ball, it seemed like, was more than happy to let Chris Paul sort of do his thing, or what certainly wasn't putting up the typical Devin Booker numbers that we had seen over the course of the regular season in those first couple of rounds. DeAndre Ayton, though, 12 points, 6 rebounds, and it'll be interesting to see in the coming days what gets released about him, whether we find out about some injury that he was trying to deal with, or some nagging, you know, muscle pull or something, because he has essentially turned into a shell of his former self these last couple of games. And it's at the absolute worst time. You're in the NBA Finals. But is there something more going on? Is there a nagging injury we don't know about? Or did the Milwaukee Bucks just figure out what to do with DeAndre Ayton and the Phoenix Suns after those first two games in Phoenix? Because those first two games, they looked like world beaters. DeAndre Ayton was just crashing glass, picking up tip-ins and putbacks, and was a double-double machine and just a force on both ends. And then the last four games, I mean, did essentially a disappearing act out there. So really, really interesting to see what comes of that. Maybe it's even just fatigue of having to chase Giannis around for most of the night. And, you know, probably DeAndre Ayton was used to, in some of those other series, not having the physical toll of having to guard Giannis for 48 minutes a night on the defensive end, and then try and get it done on the offensive end of the glass as well too. So who knows? Be interesting to see for sure. But all of that to say, congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks. Certainly well-deserved. Great to see the small market team go out there and finally win themselves an NBA championship. And who knows, maybe this is the bridge that needs to get built, that men's relationships between Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Maybe now that Aaron Rodgers, who's a minority owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, he's in a good mood, just got a championship ring there in the NBA to add to his Super Bowl ring. Maybe this is the first step towards reconciliation. But let's transition over to some NFL football talk with our good friend Bobby Thompson, and talk all things NFL rumors, Patriots, Deshaun Watson, and more. Enjoy. Before we get to our interview with Bobby Thompson, I want to remind everyone to head over to mybookie.ag for all your online sports betting needs. Last week, if you were following along, our two-game parlay got turned into a single-game money line because the Red Sox-Yankees game ended up getting postponed due to COVID protocols. But we at least hit on the money line there, so not as much of a payout as we would have liked, because I got to assume that the Red Sox would have beaten the Yankees. They've just got their number this year. But we did end up winning, so let's keep that hot streak going this week. Again, not a whole heck of a lot going on unless you are a fan of baseball, which we are going to be partaking in the two-game parlay tonight. We're going to take the New York Mets to beat the Cincinnati Reds. Marcus Stroman on the mound there for the Mets. And we're going to take the Milwaukee Brewers to beat the Kansas City Royals with Lauer on the mound there as well, too. So two teams in there, just straight money line. We'll see if they can keep our hot streak alive tonight. That's mybookie.ag, or if you want, you can head over to dinespressbox.com, click on any of the banners we've got up there, and they will pre-populate any of the promo codes for you and take you right on over to the site. First deposit bonuses available. Use the promo code DINESPORTS, DINESSPORTS, no spaces in between, so that they know who sent you. Must be 18 or older to participate. Only gamble what you are willing to lose. Trouble gambling? Check out any of the resources they have online at MyBookie, and they will take you to all of the appropriate places to get some help. Let's get right to it with our interview with Bobby Thompson. Joining us today on the podcast, we've got NFL journalist covering the New England Patriots, whose work has appeared on Full Press Coverage, Fan Side of the Pewter Plank, and more. Bobby Thompson, how are you doing today, sir?
What's going on, man? I'm very happy to be on here, excited. I was looking forward to this all weekend. It's finally here, so definitely happy to get to it with you.
Absolutely. Fantastic time of year. We got about a month and a half to go from regular season kickoff. No shortage of storylines. And, you know, you and I were already talking off air about one of them, me being an Eagles fan. We might as well just start with that one while it's fresh in our memory.
Why not?
I think it was last week, put out a tweet saying, you know, Deshaun Watson being traded to the Eagles, very real possibility. Team is not committed to Jalen Hurts long term. Lots to unpack here, though, obviously, because Deshaun Watson in the standoff with the Texans, whether he ever takes a snap for them ever again, highly unlikely, but who knows. But he's also embroiled amidst the sexual misconduct allegations and all of that going on too. So just from bird's eye view, like, where is Deshaun Watson in terms of his contract getting traded, possibly being suspended? Like, what are the updates? Because it's really gone quiet on that front as of late.
Yeah, it really has. So with this, since all of these allegations are civil suits, they're not there's no felony, there's no charges that have been filed yet. Not saying that can't happen, but not yet. It has to be done in court, and that's going to take a year. They said this could take a year. This could take a while to get settled. So the NFL's investigation, they're not going to conclude for a year as well. So they have no other choice. They have two choices. So Roger Goodell can put Deshaun Watson on the commissioner's exempt list. He could do that. Now, if he does that, obviously he can't play. He's on that list until he gets taken off, and he's going to have to apply for reinstatement until the investigation's done. Right. I don't see that happening. I will be shocked if that happens. We saw guys like Antonio Brown go on the commissioner's exempt list because of his sexual misconduct allegations, but that was much different circumstance. These are 22 girls that have accused Deshaun Watson of inappropriate behavior. Mm-hmm. So it's very concerning. And the thing is that I feel the NFL, when they put somebody on the commissioner's exempt list, especially Roger Goodell, they do it right away. Mm-hmm. This has been months. We've heard about this for months now. Nothing. There's been absolutely nothing out there. So here's my prediction, and here's what's going to go down. So he's going to play this year. He is. He'll play. Don't think he gets suspended. He will not play for the Houston Texans ever again. That has not changed. And teams, he had a huge market interested. It was earlier on before the Jets got Zach Wilson. The Jets were heavy into it. Obviously, because of that, they backed out. But their interest in him was always kind of minimal. But the one team that really has always kept a close, there's two teams that have kept a close eye. It's the Denver Broncos, of course, and the Philadelphia Eagles. The Philadelphia Eagles are not committed to Jalen Hurts long-term. They're not. They're just not. They saw what he could do last year. It was very hot and coldless, and he was a rookie. I still think he deserves a chance. I think he's a national champion. He's won championships. Yes. Was he replaced by Tua Tagovailoa? Yes, he was. But I will say this on air. I think he has more upside than Tua Tagovailoa does. And it's very evident in the NFL early on so far. So with that, they're not committed to him long term. I think they want a little bit more consistency. Nick Sirianni, the new head coach, which, by the way, the Eagles team, the whole Eagles players, all 53, literally don't understand what he's doing. There's rumors that they're very confused with what he wants to do. It's not really concrete. But in terms of the quarterback, he's very interested in Deshaun Watson. Listen, Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie would love to get a guy like Deshaun Watson. He's 25 years old. He's young. He's got many years. His contract is not as bad as people think. Eagles, yes, they have cap issues. They've had cap issues since 2017, but somehow they make it happen. But here's the thing. Does Deshaun Watson want to go to Philly? Now, the offense would be perfect. They run an RPO type of style. He will get his carries. He could. He's still going to throw a tremendous amount. The Eagles, I think they want to get more to it of running the football. I really do, with Miles Sanders, see what they got. But the one thing I will say in terms of Deshaun Watson, I think he really wants to go to Denver. I think he really likes it out there. He likes what they have with the defense and with the weapons they have on offense out there. But the Eagles' offense is not bad at all. You get Devontae Smith, you just added. Zach Ertz, for now, is still on the team. I think he gets traded right before training camp starts next week, and keep a close eye, in my opinion. I'll tell you, keep a close eye on the Buffalo Bills for that one. But they got some pretty good weapons. You know, they have Dallas Goedert still, Jalen Reagor, who I think can make a huge jump. So they got some good weapons. So we'll see what happens within the next couple of weeks. I don't think it's going to happen like literally right after I hang up with you. It's going to happen. And watch that happen too. Watch that happen. So I will say that, keep a close eye on the Deshaun Watson situation. I do think the Eagles will be in it till the end. And my prediction, I think he goes to Philly and he can make you guys compete in that division. The only problem I have with the Eagles is I want to see a little bit more on defense.
Yeah. No. Don't open that can of worms with me. This will turn into a 4-hour episode on holes we need to plug there. But it is an interesting one, right? Because, okay, if you're to assume that he plays this year, everything goes smoothly, okay, no problems. But like you were alluding to, let's say this court case gets resolved in a year or something, or there's new allegations, or it does become federal charges or something like that, as opposed to just a civil suit. Like, it is a big risk, and you could only be getting a year out of him, and then maybe you're back to square one because he's going to be sitting out, you know, 18 plus or whatever the next season. So that, coupled with the fact that the draft has already happened and a lot of teams went out and selected quarterbacks that would have been interested in him, the market's probably cooled quite a bit for Deshaun Watson from what it was at the height of the impending breakup between him and the Texans. So, like, what kind of a package do you think that Deshaun Watson could realistically fetch at this point, given the fact that, you know, training camps are up and running, OTAs have happened, and, you know, we're a month and a half away from the season? What do you think that the Texans would be looking for in terms of compensation if they did part with Watson?
Well, that's a great question, Kyle. It really is. So, and to go back real quick to what you were alluding to in terms of this, yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty with Deshaun Watson. There really is, because, for instance, the Eagles could get him in 1 year, and then after the investigation concludes, they could suspend him. And then he goes on the exempt list, or more allegations somehow come out. There's a lot of uncertainty. So it's really a roll of the dice. It really is. It's a huge gamble taking on not only this contract right now, but taking on a guy who could be in huge legal trouble. So that, and do you want your franchise to have the face of your franchise? Because let's face it, the face of your franchise is the quarterback, being a guy like that. So especially in the city of Philadelphia, because it's going to be very, very tough to win them over if you're doing stuff like that. Very, very tough crowd. But a trade package, that's a great question. It's got to start with three firsts. 25 years old, a lot of great upside. Yes, he's had some injuries. He did tear his ACL his rookie year, but he's been absolutely sensational. Three firsts is to get in the door. Yeah. It's just to get in the door. And I expect it to be a little bit more. Three first round picks, I think, for Deshaun Watson. Texans with quarterback, I don't think they're going to ask for Jalen Hurts in the deal. I think that the Eagles, and they need a backup. So I think he stays. But I will say that then there's another effect because Jalen Hurts could be like, hey, I want out of here now. So it's a little bit of a domino effect. But I'm going to say to start, three first-round picks and maybe a player. And if they want a player, why? You know what? What about the Texans trying to add Zach Ertz to the deal? They really need a tight end still. So that could maybe be a throw in there. So it's interesting. But for me, it's going to depend on draft capital. That's what the Texans, a new general manager who I know because he's with the Patriots for so many years, Nick Cazario, he's going to want draft capital. So three first-round picks, and I think he'll be very, very happy just to get let them in the door of that. But that won't get it done. They're going to need a lot more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And definitely a situation worth monitoring. And like you said, with the season creeping up on us, there's only so much time to install an offense on the player. So who knows? Could be something that the Texans might have to eat a little bit on that just to get something done if they do ultimately end up trying to ship him out this year. But if we go from one QB situation to another in your neck of the woods, bit of an interesting subplot going on in Foxborough these days. Obviously,
yeah, there is.
Cam Newton, former MVP, but certainly didn't look the part last year, struggled mightily. Then you've got Mac Jones now in the mix. And from everything you've seen, you know, you've got god-awful optic-looking practice footage of Cam throwing lame ducks and Jones is throwing lasers into the end zone. Uh-huh. There. You got that. And now you're starting to see the little breadcrumbs get released from Patriots players as far as, oh, Mac Jones's leadership, his swagger, his poise, his. So all of this is sort of setting up to, oh, okay, well, could be Mac Jones's show sooner rather than later. In your mind, do you see Belichick and company handing over the keys to the Patriots offense to Mac Jones sooner rather than later? Or is this going to be a case of, listen, you're going to be on clipboard duty until it's blatantly evident that we've gotten every ounce of talent and results out of Cam Newton that we've gotten before we give you the starting role?
Another great question, Kyle. So with this, listen, Bill Belichick, you never know what's going to happen, because those of you who don't know, and definitely I recommend anybody who wants to know about the Patriots dynasty, go buy the book from Jeff Benedict, The Dynasty. You'll learn the things I learned from this are crazy. Bill Belichick, real quick story. Bill Belichick wanted to start Tom Brady in the 2001 season over Drew Bledsoe. That's how good Tom Brady was in camp. But they didn't. They stuck with Drew because he was the franchise guy. He just signed a $100 million contract. What happened? He gets hurt. Mo Lewis, thank you very much. The rest is history. With this, here's the thing. Mac Jones was drafted 15th overall. You don't draft a quarterback in the first round that high to sit all year. Mm-hmm. You just don't. I have not seen that. Patrick Mahomes, when he was drafted higher than Mac Jones was. He sat for about 15 games the last two games he played. Mm-hmm. Or 14 games the last two games he played. Bill Belichick loves Cam Newton. There's no denying that. He's given him a chance. We've seen really, really bad Cam Newton. His accuracy has never been there. He's never been an accurate quarterback. But the one thing he is he's a guy who's not going to sit down and cry about it. He comes to work every day. The effort is always there. That's not the problem. It's just the execution. Yes, in camp, we saw him throwing lame ducks still. It's accuracy. He's going to have to work on that. But he said he's comfortable. Another year in the system, he's going to be a lot better, I guarantee you. Especially with the weapons that were added. Patriots added these two tight ends in Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry and added Nelson Aguilar and Kendrick Bourne. And the list goes on and on. I could sit here all day with all the free agents they signed. But the thing is they signed these guys for Cam Newton's offense. That's basically what it was. They are giving Cam Newton all the tools he needs. Last year, Bill Belichick knew this. Patriots fan knew this. Patriots offense was horrendous. There was no playmakers. Julian Edelman was playing on literally one leg because his knee was that bad. The only person that was anything of significance was Jacoby Myers and, in my opinion, Damian Harris, the running back who's really come on. So I think Bill Belichick, you never know, but he's going to stick with Cam Newton to start. And I'm going to tell you this. 5 weeks in, Cam Newton's throwing interceptions, struggling to hit wide open receivers. And we all know his game is the tight end. And we got two tight ends now, not just one. We got two. And two of the best young tight ends in this league. And one of them being one of the most versatile we've ever seen in Jonnu Smith. So with this, this is all set up for success for Cam Newton. Now it's on him. There's no excuses now. Last year, COVID, yes. Struggling with the playbook, yes. And lack of weapons, 100%. Now it's all on him. So I'm going to start off with the first 5 weeks. It's going to be him, especially that game. You don't want a rookie quarterback going to play Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. You don't want – I don't care who it is playing quarterback. But Mac Jones is quarterback of the future. That's what he is. He will play this year. Now I'm going to say my prediction, I'm going to go with week 10. I'll go with week 10. I could see Cam, and if there's an injury, he'll come in. And I'm just going to say this. When Mac Jones comes in there, there's never going back. The rest is history. That's what's going to happen. But Cam Newton will. So I know everyone says it's a competition, of course. Let me just give you guys a little spoiler. It's Cam Newton. It is. It's Cam Newton. He will start for the Patriots week one. We all know that.
Well, I mean, you just alluded to it right there. Obviously, in very actually un-Bill Belichick-like fashion, the Patriots actually went out there and just opened the vault this offseason and signed almost everyone under the sun at one point.
Finally, right?
Yeah. Well, he apparently saved up every single offseason move just for this one offseason there. So he got 10 years worth of it gone in one offseason. But looking at all of the new faces, whether it is on the offensive side of the ball or defensive side of the ball, special teams, whatever, which player coming in are you most excited about? And which one was the biggest head scratcher for you as far as, okay, well, they signed him, but I don't really see the fit necessarily.
Well, first off, I was extremely excited. I knew the Patriots had, they had the most cap space in the league this year. Yeah. It was the Jets, the Colts, and the Patriots. Top three teams with cap space. And right off the bat, Bill Belichick, well, he started a few days earlier when he traded for Trent Brown. That was I didn't expect that. So getting him back, that was huge. For me, biggest surprise, Matthew Judon was somebody I did it. I didn't say this. I work for a company called Grunt Talks GT Sports. Me and my best friend do a podcast there. I'm the football guy. He does baseball. We both do it consistently together. And I did a predictions article for free agents and top 50 free agents where they would land. And Matthew Judon, I put Jets because I thought it just made too much sense. And then going on through the day, Adam Schefter watching all SportsCenter. And then I hear Matthew Judon close to a deal with the Patriots. I'm like, really? That to me, I love it. I'm a huge Matthew Judon guy. The guy is underrated. He's versatile. He could do so many things for you. And the fact that the Patriots addressed it with the best pass rusher on the market, loved it. Mm-hmm. So with that, Jonnu Smith, we knew. Everybody knew that was going to happen. There was no secret. Everybody and their mother knew the Patriots were going after a tight end. And it was going to be – we all thought it was Hunter Henry. Jonnu Smith was first. The next day, what do? They flex up and they get Hunter Henry. That's Bill Belichick's boy. Bill Belichick loves him some Hunter Henry. Now he's got him. So – biggest head scratcher for me, Nelson Aguilar, 100%. I think that I'm sitting there. I knew we needed a receiver, so I'm saying like, okay, Kendrick Bourne signs. I'm like, oh, this guy's underrated. He's happy to be here. He's posting how much he can't wait to win with the Patriots. Love the guy's attitude. Watch his tape. Very underrated, great route runner. Yeah. Nelson Aguilar, I'm sitting there. I'm looking in 2 years, $22 million. Why? Why are we giving this guy $11 million a year for one season when he reinvented himself? You know him better than anybody. He was rated in 2019 the worst, and I'm not kidding, the worst receiver in the National Football League. That's how bad he was. He leaves
I'm fully aware of the Nelson Aguilar experience there. At one point, I was considering forming a support group for Eagles fans. It was absolutely infuriating to watch him just hands of stone. You could hit him square in the numbers and he would still find a way to drop it. And then he's got like stick'em on his gloves with the Raiders all of a sudden. So yeah, he go from one extreme to the other. It was infuriating. So we'll fast forward a year from now and we'll get back together and you can talk to me about what your Nelson Aguilar experience as a Patriots fan is.
You'll hear me after a few weeks say what I think of Nelson Aguilar. But so far in camp, he's looked really good, but he hasn't gone up against anybody yet. So I have high hopes for him. Now, why it was so head-scratching is because why would we give somebody like that type of money? I think the Patriots could have used that money elsewhere, especially $11 million. The reason why Patriots tried to go after A.J. Green, they lost, and he decided to go to Arizona. Okay, they were Patriots were this close, and I'll tell you, this close from getting AJ Green. They had some interest in Julio Jones. I think it would have been perfect if the Patriots didn't have Nelson Aguilar. They would have went out and got Julio. I really do. Nelson Aguilar, and I wrote an article on Full Press Patriots too. Check that out on why Nelson Aguilar will help this offense. He reinvented himself in Vegas. Mm-hmm. He took a bet on himself, and basically became Derek Carr's favorite target. Derek Carr was very disappointed when he left. He was a deep threat. Nelson Aguilar, there's one thing about Nelson Aguilar you can't teach. He's got speed. He's fast. Very shifty. He's very versatile. He can do multiple things. And to me, what I saw last year is he's more of catching the ball with his hands. He's used it. His hands got a lot better. Now it could be stick 'em. We'll see. But I think that what I saw from him was more concentration. If you look at him earlier in his career, he looked a lot upfield. He's running a drag route, and he's 5 or 6 feet in front of the closest defender. And when you catch the ball, and I hate this. I can't stand it. Even when I played, when a receiver catches the ball and before it's in his hands, he looks upfield. Yes, we get it. You see daylight, you want to go. Look it in and then go. He was the worst at that. And the one thing, too, is he had a really bad year 2019. And with the Raiders, I think they gave him more comfortability. They didn't move him around as much. They could have if they wanted to, because he has that versatility, especially with you guys with the Eagles for so many years. But they used him as a deep threat. And that's why the Patriots got him. Stretch the field. Patriots haven't had a guy to stretch the field in years since Randy Moss. So I'm not saying Nelson Aguilar is in the same category as Moss. I'm saying he has the ability to stretch the field with his speed. That's exactly why. Now, also another thing is Nelson Aguilar last year had the second most touchdowns on 20 yards downfield. And the first is Tyreek Hill with 8. Nelson Aguilar had 6. Fantastic season for Nelson Aguilar. He was going to get paid no matter where he was going to go. But he chose New England. He wants to be that guy. He wants to help. Bill Belichick's always had a liking for him, even when he was struggling. So with that, let's hope it's not in 2019, Nelson Aguilar. Let's hope for 2020 and 2017, 2018, Nelson Aguilar.
Yeah, we'll see if you're getting Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde there.
Yes, we will.
Speaking of signings, one thing that New England over the years has been sort of notorious for, even if it is a homegrown talent, crowd favorite, whatever, is letting some of those aging veterans sort of
right.
Once their contracts are up. One person who might be the exception to the rule there is Stephon Gilmore, and obviously some contract extension talks and all of that are going on. What's just the latest on his negotiations with New England, and do you see a deal getting done prior to the season?
Well, it's funny you say that, because literally this morning I was given indication that there's been no recent progress on extension talks. No, I'm not stressing. I don't think Patriots fans should really worry. He's not going anywhere. He's going to play this year at least. But the Patriots want to get this deal done.
Mm-hmm.
Do they get it done? It's going to take some time. Yes, it might even take into training camp, but it's going to get done. Bill Belichick knows this. Bill Belichick knows what Stephon Gilmore has done for this defense. He's changed it for the better. Stephon Gilmore is arguably one of the best corners in the league and one of the best the Patriots have ever had in franchise history. And that's from Ty Law, the year we had Revis. But this guy is different. He's a lot different than those guys. Shuts down receivers. He's not afraid to tackle. He forces more fumbles than anything. I believe he's had some of the most seasons with the most pass breakups I've ever seen. He's always around the ball. Do I think a deal gets done? Yes. And it's not good. It's going to be an extension. And yes, Bill Belichick doesn't sign players over 30 years old. He doesn't give them big extensions. This is an exception. Bill Belichick doesn't want to face Tom Brady without his number one corner out there, because we saw without Gilmore what it's like, and it's not pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Last year when he got injured, unfortunately. So Stephon Gilmore and the Patriots, I said this in my article. I think it would be wise to give him at least a 3-year deal. I said, and look at the ballpark of where he wants to be paid. He told the great Josina Anderson, who does a great job for ESPN. He said he wants what he's worth. He doesn't want to leave New England. He wants to stay. He loves Bill Belichick. He loves Robert Kraft. He loves Foxborough. He's been to 2 Super Bowls. He's a champion. His legacy is solidified. He wants to be paid, and he deserves to be paid. He was, even when he signed that contract with the Patriots in 2017, he wasn't the highest paid. He wants to be in the ballpark. Now, let's face it, he's not getting Jalen Ramsey money. He's not getting $20 million a year at 31 years old. I'm sorry. No, I wouldn't do that either. But I think he could get something in the terms of what Darius Slay got. Darius Slay signed like a 3-year, $51 million deal. It's like $16 million a year. I would give him 3 years, 52. It's 16. Give him $16.5 million a year. You could even do this. You could even do a 3-year deal, and the last year of the deal is a team option. You could do that. So at 33 or 34 years old, he has 1 year left, and you need cap space. You don't think he's playing at the standard that he's used to playing, and that you think he could be. You could get rid of him without any dead cap issues. So I think that's beneficial to both parties involved. I think Bill Belichick is standing pat on his number. Now, is it being reported the Patriots haven't even entertained an extension? They have. And if people say they haven't, that's not true. They have. They have been open with Stephon Gilmore. He didn't come to mini camp. Belichick didn't expect him to. He's coming back from a torn quad. That's tough, especially for somebody of his age at 31. But a deal will get done. I expect it sooner rather than later. Don't be surprised. Next week, the Patriots start camp a week from tomorrow, 8 days. That gives them 8 days to really get going. And with the new CBA, it's tough for players to hold out of training camp. So something's got to give. It will be worked out within the next week, and I expect it to happen. But don't be surprised if it's a 2 or 3 year extension.
And I mean, the AFC East just in general, which the Patriots were about as good of a lock to win for decades plus there, because it was essentially a cakewalk, has almost morphed into a buzzsaw now with some of the other teams coming on the up and up. You've got Buffalo, who looks like a legitimate threat. If Tua can get things going in Miami, they're looking pretty scary. I mean, the Jets are the Jets, but they at least added some pieces. So who knows? They could be a little bit frisky this year. But with the pieces they brought in via either draft or via free agency, and how they've constructed this roster, just from what you've seen on paper, does this look like a fringe playoff team? Does this look like a team who could potentially win the division? Or do you think it's going to be eerily similar results to what we saw in 2020 in that down year for the Patriots?
Well, that's another great question. The thing is with that is, look, Bill Belichick will never want to see what he saw last year. And as a Patriots fan, someone who covers the team, I don't want to see that again. It's not fun to cover a team that's not doing as well as going to two decades of dominance that they've had. The Bills are something different. The Bills are a different animal, but they got some holes they need to fill up there in Buffalo that I don't think a lot of people are really talking about. But I think the Patriots, they added talent. I think it's all up to how the quarterback plays. I think that's it. You can only go be as good as how your quarterback's playing. The defense getting Dante Hightower back, huge. Can't express it anymore. This defense will be back to the way you got. You remember how the Patriots in 2019, their defense, the first 5 or 6 weeks were literally, you couldn't pass on them. You couldn't run on them. You couldn't do anything. They let up 14 points a game for the whole year. That's unheard of. You're going to see that again. They loaded up the defensive line. The rush defense of the Patriots last year was dead last. This year, that's going to be heavily improved with adding guys like Devon Godshaw, who's very underrated, and Lawrence Guy coming back, and especially the rookie we drafted, Christian Barmore, who I think could be a real threat. But I will say, I think the Patriots are going to compete for the division. They are. And if people say I'm crazy, then I'm crazy. They're going to compete. They have the weapons. The defense is going to be better. It's going to be tough. I think we're better than the Dolphins. I think our skill set players on defense, 100 times better than what they have on defense over there. And on offense, Devontae Parker can't do it by himself. The running back situation in Miami is non-existent, in my opinion, with no disrespect to Gaskin, but he's not a guy you want, you know, as your every down back. Tua, with me, I need to see more from him. I'll be honest, I don't like what I see. It was 1 year, was thrown into the fire. We'll see what happens early on this year, and I'll make a real determination. But I think we're better. Jets are the Jets. We're not. They do had Zach Wilson. They added some great pieces on both offense and defense. And my podcast co-host and my best friend, his name is Julian Gallardi. He covers the Yankees. He is a huge Jets fan, and we always joke around, and he's even realistic, and he does not expect to compete. He's expecting 6 or 7 wins. That's exactly what I think. I don't think the Jets are going to compete this year. The Jets have a bright future with draft capital and cap space, but they're not going to compete. But I do think the Patriots could be a team that are going to scare a lot of people. I really do. People are going to take the Patriots lightly because, of course, Cam Newton. Of course, he struggled last year. He wasn't good. Whole new offense. defense getting back to form, it's going to be a lot different in Foxborough. I expect a lot of great things. My floor for them, I said they could go. And in a podcast that I did a few weeks ago, I said the Patriots have like three losses. I'm going to back that down. I'm going to go with like 12-5, 11-6. I think that's pretty good. I think that's pretty realistic for this team, but they're definitely going to at least add a few more wins than last year. They were 7-9, but they'll be a lot better. They will get double-digit wins this year.
On the one hand, it's hard to get any information out of Bill Belichick on a good day.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
Yeah, the vault of secrecy that he is. But he would never go out and say it publicly. But as you alluded to there, if you read, you know, The Dynasty by Jeff Benedict, who we actually had on the show. So if you didn't listen to that episode before, go back in time, check out one of our past episodes there, folks. But you know that he is one of the most hyper-competitive individuals in the world, concerned about legacy. And for all those years, it was always, okay, like, who's making who? Is Belichick shaping Brady? Is Brady the result of the Patriots' success? Like, which way was that getting pulled? So I have to figure it's got to stick in his craw a little bit that Tom goes down south to Tampa Bay, instantly wins the Super Bowl with the new team, and they have all these struggles up there. So do you, how much of a motivating factor, I guess, do you think it was for Tom Brady to have all that success down with another team? It's like watching your golden boy go and, you know, marry your ex-girlfriend or something like that. And you have the season that you did. Like, do you think that was a large reason why they spent the way they spent in the offseason and maybe brought in some of the personnel that they did? Like, how much do you really think that's fueling Belichick and company up in Foxborough?
I think it fuels them a lot more than people realize.
Yeah.
I think that it bothered him. I really do. I think he's happy for Tom. I do. Listen, whatever, we all know Bill and Tom at the end could not stand each other.
Yeah.
It was 20 years of the same thing. And Tom, in my opinion, I think he should have gotten more weapons than they gave him. I think that's both on Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick, but also Tom Brady. It's not like the Patriots are ungrateful for what Tom has done. The mm-hmm. Patriots gave Tom his chance, and he knows that. Tom will always love this here. When it's all said and done, Tom is going to come back home where he belongs and sign a one-day contract. And this logo behind me is where he will retire. So, of course. But the one thing I think that definitely motivates him, I think seeing the team struggle as bad as it was. I think what Bill Belichick did is I think he took it for granted how good Tom was and really masked a lot of issues on offense, which he did. The lack of weapons. And I think he realized it. I think he's like, you know what? I messed up. I really did. I kept an eye on this. When we had the cap space, we should have went out and got a weapon. Maybe Tom would still be here. But I think that definitely it's a mixture of things. I think Tom winning is a huge one. I think that was the icing on the cake. We all knew the Patriots were going to add. Lewis Riddick is literally this close with Bill Belichick, and he told us before it was even going to happen, Bill's going to reload. And after Tom won, he said, oh, Bill is extra motivated now. And that's exactly what he did. I do think that, you know, he wants to stick it to Tom. I think what did Tom and Gronk do this year? They stuck it to Bill. That's what they did. All happy down there. Tom's getting drunk on boats, throwing the Lombardi down here. He's having fun. And the thing is with me, I haven't seen Tom this happy in a long time. And that's just what he got, what he wanted. He won a Super Bowl without Bill. Now it's time for Bill to win without Tom. And he can do that. And people who say that he can't do that, no. Listen, it's both. And I'll get to it real quick. I don't want to keep rambling on. I'm sorry I keep doing that with every question you ask. But the one thing with this is everyone asks, is it Tom or is it Bill? It's both. They both fed off each other. They're two of the smartest ever. The greatest quarterback and coach combination of all time. Numbers don't lie. But in terms of free agency, I think Bill's outlook, and listen, Bill's the general manager too. So he's the head coach and GM. So he has full say on everything. And the one thing I think he did this year was look at the team and really go, okay, this is where we need to address. I don't pay attention to offense. He's a defensive guy. Now he did. He added the guys that would help. Patriots were the most successful with that double tight end. They added it right back. They go get a speedy receiver to stretch the field. They get that in Aguilar. They need another slot guy who could be versatile and go all around. They add Kendrick Bourne. On defense, they need another versatile guy in the secondary. They add Jalen Mills, who you know, the Green Goblin, who I'm very excited about, who I can't wait to see play because he's a thorn in your side when you play against them, but you love them when you play, when you have them with you. But I will say with that is, listen, week four, and I made a video on Grunt Talks GT Sports YouTube channel of Master versus Apprentice. It's, this is what we've all been waiting for. It's, don't expect like a big handshake and hug at the end of the game. Cause I'll tell you this, Tom loses to Bill, Tom's walking off the field. That's what he's doing in Foxborough. Bill loses, same thing. Bill's extra motivated about a lot of things, but Tom Brady leaving, I think he expected it, going and being as successful as he was, and literally Tampa, literally trolling Tom, especially Bruce Arians, saying, oh, we let Tom do what he wants. He wants a wide receiver. We'll go out and get it. That's a huge dig to Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick. And if people say it's not, it is. They hear this. Robert Kraft signs the checks. He writes off on everything, and that's exactly what he did this offseason. They're going to stick it to Tom. And I will tell you this, Tom's going to come into Foxborough motivated. But here's the thing. Here's another thing. If there's somebody who knows the Patriots more than ever, it's Tom. But if there's somebody who knows Tom more than anybody, it's Bill. It's going to be a back and forth. It's going to be something. But yeah, Tom winning a championship in Tampa, yes. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. That was definitely a factor for him to want to go out and spend.
Absolutely. And I mean, obviously you've had the best of both worlds. You've had the full Tom Brady experience there because you've been covering the Patriots for many years now. And you actually live in Tampa right now as well, too.
So you got to do firsthand
experiences with the whole, you know, Tampa Bay and all that craziness of whatever the hell's in the water down there these days. But like just an observational standpoint, what are the differences that you noticed, aside from apparently not needing an MCL to play football at the highest level, that you notice between New England Tom Brady versus Tampa Tom Brady? Or do you think that he just carried a lot of those same things and it's just in a different system?
Well, that's probably the best question you've asked today. That's a really good one. So what do I see from New England Tom, from Tampa Tom? The fact that Tom is being as open as he is and he's going out drinking and he's having a fun time. On terms of play, he's throwing the ball downfield more than he ever has. If you see on with the Buccaneers, when you got weapons like Mike Evans, who is one of the best receivers, Chris Godwin, who's going to get paid wherever he goes, and you sign Antonio Brown to a chump change type of deal, and we all know how great Antonio Brown was, and if he could get back to that, that's scary. But the one thing Tom is doing is he's stretching down the field. That's what he wants to do. Everybody knocks Tom's arm. Tom has a very underrated arm. Even at 44 years old, he's going to be 44 on August 3rd. So with what I see is this offense is built for him to throw down the field. What I see with the Buccaneers offense is what they actually cater to him, what he wants to do. And Josh McDaniels, not saying Josh didn't do that for Tom because he did, but Josh also had a say in what he wanted to do as well. He had the play sheet and everything. So with that, what I think is with Tom is he's just having fun. Tom's just going out there and he's letting it all out there. You saw in the Super Bowl, Tom get it literally talking smack back with Tyrann Mathieu. We didn't see that in Foxborough. Tom's just going to laugh. He's going to walk off. You don't talk badly to the GOAT because he'll just kick your ass. That's what he does. So I think he's happier. I really do. I think he's happy to be out of there. And I also think that he is stretching the field more than he has in quite some time.
Amazing. All right. Well, before we let you go, I would be remiss if I didn't at least get one prediction out of you there for this season. And let's focus that big Tampa Bay New England matchup. Give me a final score prediction for when Bill Belichick finally goes against Tom Brady for the first time in their careers.
Best game of the century, it might be, actually. You get to see this. Everyone's going to be in Foxborough to see that. I wish I would, but. So it's going to be back and forth. I think that the Buccaneers' defense is very underrated, but if anybody knows this, they have one weakness. It's that secondary. They don't have a number one guy. Carlton Davis is very good, but he's not that elite yet. So I think the one thing you're going to do is you're going to want to attack this secondary and the middle of the field. But the Buccaneers have two linebackers in Devin White and Lavonte David who have speed to keep up with receivers, tight ends, of course, and running backs out of the backfield. The one thing I think that's going to give the Patriots trouble, in my opinion, we got to stop the run still. I got to see it before I say it. So I think they're going to try to run the rock a lot with Leonard Fournette and Rojo and Ronald Jones. The one thing I think with the Buccaneers, and I think that they're going to struggle with, is they're going to struggle containing Cam taking off and running. I think that's going to be an issue. If you see that when they go against mobile quarterbacks, they're going to have to keep a spy on them. But I think the tight ends are going to give the Buccaneers some trouble. Mm-hmm. They struggled against Travis Kelce, Waller, all those guys. Tight ends really, really struggled for that Buccaneers defense. And another thing is I think that the Patriots pass rush got a lot better. So getting to Tom is going to be key. They added two guys who could get pressure up the middle. If Tom hates one thing, it's pressure up the middle. Devon Godshaw, Lawrence Guy, and Christian Barmore are going to be in his face every play up the middle and make him very uncomfortable. Score predictions? I'm going to go with this. I'm going to go with 31-28 Patriots. And here's what I think. I think it's tied for a while, about 5 minutes left. Tom's driving down the field, and actually, I'm going to say this. Stephon Gilmore, who Tom Brady struggles against, picks him off. Patriots have time. They drive down the field, and they kick Nick Falk kicks a game-winning field goal, and that's how it ends. I think that Gronk comes home and scores a touchdown, and he does a huge spike, and everybody is happy for him to see him back. Yeah, it's going to be weird. But I also think that the touchdowns are going to be scored by our tight ends. I think they're going to struggle against, especially Jonnu, who you could line up in the backfield and have him come out. He could do so many things. 31-28 Patriots. Patriots go to 4-0 on the year, and the Buccaneers go to 3-1. And that's going to be a bad taste in Tom's mouth. And that press conference is going to be fun to cover.
Yeah, absolutely. Might actually even get full sentences out of Belichick for a change.
Yeah, you might. Yeah. That week during the press conference, when you say what's going to happen when you see Tom, he's just going to be like, I don't know. He's not going to pay too much into it. He'll acknowledge Tom's the greatest of all time, which he is. There'll be a video tribute. You know, everybody on the Patriots is calling out Tom. Byron Coward said, we're not welcoming him. All I'll say is this. Don't poke the bear. Don't poke him months before we get started, because that's when he's unstoppable. So let's cool it down with that, Byron Coward. Let's get it.
Well, Bobby, thank you so much for taking the time to come on with us today. For those that are listening, though, that want
my
to
either
connect with you on Twitter or read any of your articles, like where are the best places to find you?
Absolutely. So you could always interact with me on my Twitter at bthompson81. If you want to shoot me a DM, I always answer DMs. I like to interact with fans. You can follow me, follow my articles on, I just started writing for the Pewter Plank for FanSided, which is the Buccaneers. I also write for the Rams on occasion, Ramblin' Fan, anything to keep writing. And also you can check my articles on grunttalksmlb.com. I have a lot of that. And my podcast, which is called G&T Sports Talk, presented by Grunt Talks, on Apple and Spotify.
Beautiful. Well, we appreciate it. For those that are listening, make sure to check out all those websites, connect with them on social media and more. And we'll see week 4. Maybe this will be the receipts that you can repost online there about your prediction if it does come down to that last minute field goal. So heard it here first, folks. Thanks so much for coming on, Bobby.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
And that's a wrap for another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. As always, a huge thank you goes out to our guest today, Bobby Thompson, for coming on and talking all things NFL football, rumors, stuff that he's covering, and more. Also, special shout out to our friends over at MyBookie. Make sure you use the promo code DINESPORTS for all of your online betting needs. And if you haven't already, be sure to check out thedinespressbox.com for all your latest and greatest information, breaking news, rumors, trades, all that and more online, all in one place. If you haven't already, be sure to check it out today. Until next time, folks, have a great day, stay safe, and we'll see you in a little bit.